Heidi, are you sufficiently along in your dinner that we... I'd like to welcome everyone to the work session for the North Salt Lake City Council meeting for July 18th, 2023. Our first item is our monthly financial report from Heidi.
Thank you, Mayor. So this is for the period ending May 31st, 2023. 92% of the fiscal year has elapsed at this point of this report, and revenues are 81.6% collected, expenses are 86.7% spent. Everything continues to track as anticipated. I did include some information on overall tax revenues. They are up $605,279 for the year, which is about 6.7% increase. And then court revenues, surprisingly, are starting to uptick again. So we're kind of excited. I guess maybe that's not the right word for it, but glad to see that revenue come back in, because that was kind of a hit to the general fund. So we're getting back to the pre-COVID levels with almost a $50,000 increase as of May 31st. There still has been difficulty in impact fee revenues, and even as I've looked at collections through the end of June, you can see that we're well below where we were last fiscal year. But I just wanted to provide that comparison up on the screen there. So current year-to-date impact fee collections are at $107,310. The prior year-to-date were at $932,085. So as we keep saying every month when I come and present, they are delayed because the development is not occurring, but it's planned and we know it's coming. Yep. So that continues to be the case there. And then I just wanted to point out that June 2023 financials will be presented in September. We receive revenue that gets booked back to June 30th all the way through August. So by then we should have a good picture of where we're going to close. It'll be unaudited financial statements, but we'll have a pretty good idea of how the general fund has fared for the year. I'm excited to see that we're closing the gap on use of fund balance, and I don't think we will actually end up using any fund balance as we close the year out and receive those additional property tax and sales tax revenues. Was there any questions? Up the mic. There was one other item that I had in my memo. It was related to the utility billing. So we've looked and researched how we can get more information on our utility billing format. And right now, there just isn't enough real estate. So we looked at including the tiered usage. It's information that we collect. It's readily available. If anybody were to call in to one of the utility billing clerks, we can pull it up instantly. But the amount of fields that it will take to print that out would mean that we would probably lose the space where we have the graphics that show the bar chart of usage prior year and current year, because it has to print that data of the tiered usage in grids. And for those customers that have both culinary and secondary water, they would have two grids with five lines, which would take up all of that extra space. So staff talked about it. I talked about it with the folks who work up front and work with customers most closely in utility billing and
keep going.
Oh, no. And just asked what recommendations they had. They don't often get phone calls, but we thought maybe we could solicit and just remind folks that they can always call to get that information. It's most useful in the summer months because that's when we see the biggest variances in usage. But that was the recommendation that the next time we get those forms printed, that we would include additional language on how they can get that information. They would still have to call in to get it, but
I would encourage you to continue to look for a way to get that information out on the bill, because part of the effectiveness of a conservation structure is them seeing, oh no, I used more than I was expected to, and that's why it's so expensive. So just keep looking. Maybe we need
We'll keep looking
a different form or a different format or something.
Okay. We can certainly do that. One thing that we use the back of the form just to provide information, and it's all pre-printed on there. It's kind of like, you know, check stock or something like that. A lot of the form is pre-printed, static data. I'm not sure what it would cost or what it would look like if we were to move some of that variable data to the front and back to give us some more room. That might be an option. That's one thing that I hadn't looked into, what that printing cost would be to provide that. But that might be another option because there's room on the back, and we can certainly change font sizes around or maybe even put the charts on the back, something like that. So if that's the direction, we can keep looking at it. Okay. All right. Are there any other questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Heidi. Next item is an update on the UDOT I-15 project. Sherry?
Yes, so Ken asked me to update you on a meeting that he and I had with the EIS team, Kevin Kilpatrick and Tiffany Polcock. And they just wanted to touch base with us about the EIS and the impact on Hatch Park. And so I wanted to report back and just make you aware that between our property line and the actual pavement and Jersey barrier along the current I-15 alignment, there's a row of trees there that will likely be impacted. They're not in our park property, but they kind of make up some of that canopy. And so they expressed that they will try to save as many of those trees as possible. But this illustration shows you there's a little dotted red line, which is a line where they're going to have to bring fill in up for the widening. And as you can see, it runs through a lot of those trees. Some of them are not high quality trees, but they are full grown mature trees. And so we did just want to make you aware of that. But you can see on the park property, the trees that we have along the trail that goes through those are not impacted at all. It's just those trees that are between our fence line and the Jersey barriers as it presently exists. And this just kind of gives you an example of the extent of their impact boundary and the fill line for the expansion. Do you have any questions about that or any feedback you want us to give the council or the UDOT team? We'd be happy to pass that along.
I think this is more for the Hatch Park design team. I would love to see additional trees planted there to kind of offset this. It won't help for a few years, but I want to make up those trees that are going to be removed.
Terrific. We agree with that very much. So, and this is, I did provide one other visual. We went out and took some pictures of the actual trees. So there are some trees on our side of the fence that aren't impacted, and there are some that are on their side of the fence that are impacted. That's just a little bit better perspective there. And there's another. I made these slides clear last Thursday, so I forgot what I had made for you.
Sherry, I don't remember. I don't think I've heard anything about noise mitigation yet from the I-15 team, and then maybe that comes later.
Yep, they're still assessing that. That'll be part of their report that will come out in the draft in September.
And that includes assessing this area as well.
We raised that issue with them about Hatch Park, that we felt like we wanted some noise consideration.
Mayor, let me ask him. So what do you mean, what do you anticipate we could do for noise mitigation?
Walls.
Just walls.
Something like that.
Yeah. Concrete walls. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, and also I've heard that, here's a pun, that walls, they help, so it would help the park, but actually make it noisier to the residents on the other side of the park.
Yeah, we'll have to be careful about that issue. I've heard that, but anyway, I think we ought to understand what that means, if they're going to propose walls, what it means to everybody, including people who might be far away from the wall, if there's a jump or a bounce in the noise. We need to understand that too.
But there definitely won't be any impact to our park, you know, as far as the expansion. They won't be taking any property or need any additional right-of-way there.
Thank you, Sherry. Next item is consideration of golf course public use policy and public outreach. Tyler? Or Ken? We'll start with Ken. Turn it over to Tyler.
Yeah, thanks. I'll turn it over quickly to Tyler here. I just wanted to take a moment to sort of frame this discussion. We are asking for the City Council, we're requesting that the City Council make a motion at the end of our discussion. But these issues that we're about to talk about have been issues that the golf course has dealt with for many, many years prior to Tyler's service with the city. But since Tyler's service to the city, these issues have they've increased as the course and the rounds have increased. I think they're becoming more acute and more commonplace. And I, as the city manager, I would recommend that the council authorize us to act on a program where we can begin to work with the public in a friendly way, of course, to try to make progress in really achieving proper use of the golf course, safer use of the golf course, and less vandalism, less people bringing their dogs and their bicycles and doing damage to the course. And I think we can make that progress. I think we can also do it in a way that the city council could support if you happen to get a call from an angry resident. I think we can put a program together that's professional, polite, kind, but firm, and that you can support individually as you get residents reaching out to you, which I'm sure will happen and does happen. So anyway, having said that, I have a memo. I put a memo in the packet that kind of generally outlined five areas, and then we'd love to have Tyler take most of the time so that we can hear directly from him. He's on the front line of this, trying to protect the golf course, the golfers, the residents, and we should hear from him. He has a presentation. But then at the end, again, we'd kind of like you as a council to authorize the city staff working with the golf course committee to start a public education program. So, Tyler?
So, to give you a little bit more background, we tried to send out a letter. It's probably been a little over a year ago. Linda Horrocks helped me draft a letter to send out to the neighboring homeowners around the golf course, kind of highlighting some of these things and issues that we had. Some of you may have gotten emails, or I didn't see any Facebook posts, so that was good. But we kind of instructed a lot of those homeowners, some of the issues we're having with them coming onto the golf course, and again, some of the things that Ken highlighted last year. And it seemed to have a low-level impact on what we were seeing at the golf course. This year has been exceptionally busy out there with golfers, but also a little bit more impact with those that are non-golfers. So Ken, again, highlighted some of those things, but I think my biggest concern, my biggest issue is that we have people out on the golf course that are not golfers during golfing hours. We will frequently get phone calls from people that, hey, there's so-and-so, there's a guy walking his dog on the fairway on 6, or he's on the cart path on 13, or, hey, there's kids out here on their own personal cart doing donuts, and on and on and on, and I could list out all of the stories and issues that we're having. But that's my biggest concern, is operating the golf course and not having an impact and a negative impact on the customers that are paying to be out there by people walking and coming onto the golf course. Secondarily, there's just in the early evenings and often, more oftentimes in the later evenings, people sneaking on the golf course. And we talked about this at golf committee meeting, really playing golf, so taking money away from basically the city by taking time to be on the golf course without paying. That's probably the next highest issue. with people out there. But my struggle is that I am instructing my employees, and I'm even doing that as marshaling the golf course and asking people, hey, you can't be out here. This is a golf course. We're going to ask you to not be back. And we're often met with strong rebuttals from them, and argumentative, and oftentimes cursing at some of my employees. And it's been a real struggle for us to be able to enforce the policy that's in place without feeling like we're really impacting the operations of the golf course. And I know a few of you have gotten phone calls over the last year or so with, you know, people that have been playing fetch with their dogs on the fairways, and us instructing them they can't be out there, and they're often calling you or the city. So it's been a struggle, and what I've attempted to do is kind of curb that to really have the best golf course that we can out there. I know that there's, and I see it as a black and white issue, not much of a gray issue, where in the past it really hasn't been enforced. They've really turned an eye on those that have been out in the evening or early mornings walking on the golf course, but I still think there's a liability issue as well as a maintenance and golfer issue with people on the golf course early in the mornings and late in the evenings during the operating season. So that, to me, an operating season is really once the golf course opens mid-February or March through until we're closed in November. I don't see us out there mid-December kicking people off, traipsing through the snow. That's not my objective, but it certainly is during the golfing season. And people walking on the golf course, frankly, don't know when the golf course is operating. We have tournaments that go out first light, and we have golfers out there till dark. We have one camera out on the golf course between 7 and 11, and I'll often look back through the night before and see people walking down hole 11 or up hole 11, and not 5 or 10 minutes later, I see golfers going down that direction. And I would really hate for someone to get injured or hurt because of that without them, you know, without the golfer knowing there's someone out there, not only calling to complain to us at the pro shop that there's people out there, but for someone to get hit would be a travesty. So I don't know what else to highlight other than Ken and I's attempts here is to just really gain your support and just to notify you that if you do get phone calls, this is kind of the reason why, and we're helping to kind of get the golf course back on track where it should be. So
I guess I'd just like to say that, and I've gotten calls. Part of the problem is, hey, I've always done this. You know, I've lived here 20 years, and all of a sudden, this mean guy from the pro shop comes down and starts yelling at me. You know, and so I think part of it's education. Once we get the residents on board that they can't do this, that'll help.
And I, especially in Ken's memo, I think this is going to take several years for us to finally get that culture of, okay, this is a golf course, and I can't take my dog off leash walking on the golf course, or I can't ride my bicycle on the pass. I think it's a lengthy process, and we've been in it, and we've tried for the last really 2 years with cards, but like Ken and you said, I think it's an education process that's going to take us letters and newsletters and hangers on doors and things like that.
I have a first-hand knowledge of a city official whose children used to play on the 13th sand trap there after dark. But they're all grown now.
You know, if I could say, there's some areas where it's actual theft and it's trespass. And breaking the law with regard to unleashed dogs. So part of this, as you say, it's a campaign to educate. Sometimes it's the carrot and the stick that you have to work with, right? And I'm wondering from the police department what it is that we could do, or from code enforcement, so that we have teeth to this.
Yeah, I agree.
That's a great question, Councilmember Baskin. And as you know, trespass is something that we really could enforce, but we need to give reasonable notification that it is a trespass situation. And as the mayor has pointed out, historically that has not been how this facility has been treated. So there are people who could make a defensible argument, I believe, that they didn't realize they were trespassing. There was no intent. So from the police department standpoint, things like signs, and even in some places, I believe fencing would reasonably, and I know fencing is not a, it's not a cheap solution, but it's also a very effective solution to the protection of property assets that owners or managers, such as Tyler, have to use sometimes to give reasonable notice that this is not open public ground. This is, yes, it's a publicly owned facility, but it's not public use like a park is or something like that. You have to pay to use this facility, and it's different in that area. And I think good signage would help us. I also think that in certain places, fences should be considered.
My question is, perhaps when you've got a habitual offender and it's possible it's a juvenile,
yeah,
or it's possible it's somebody who just is entitled, would you make an arrest?
Well, by the definition of an arrest, would we issue a citation? Maybe.
And would it be a Class B or Class C? Just an infraction?
Criminal trespass is a Class B misdemeanor unless it's at a residence. So that's a good question, and I think we would try to be very discretionary on that. Not every situation warrants an arrest in that kind of a case. But I think Tyler has had several individuals that he has or his staff has given notice to that continue to flaunt that notice. Mm-hmm. And when the police do get involved with that, my direction without telling each individual officer what to do is if they will have my full support in issuing a trespass citation. And if the person who receives that citation feels that was done unjustly, that's the process that our justice court has to solve that.
And the juvenile court.
Yeah, that's a little bit different because obviously we don't work as closely with the county attorneys that prosecute those juveniles as we do our city attorneys in our justice court. Mm-hmm. But yes, the juvenile court would be the right venue to contest what they felt like was an unjust citation.
Sorry.
That's okay.
I'm sorry. What about destruction of property, the breaking of the pins, the stealing of the pins, ruining the lip on the sand trap? What about that?
Absolutely, we would issue citations on things of that nature, and I don't think there's been a case where we haven't done that. I know there's been a few miscommunications between golf course personnel and police on trespass issues, but I don't think there's ever been any on damage issues.
We did have a motorcyclist and an ATV out there a week and a half ago, and the officers did. We caught them. We met them at their house, and the officers met us up there and issued them trespassing. So I think under those lights, if there's something egregious where someone's intentionally vandalizing the golf course, I think we're on the same page with where we're at there.
And we've done that with the parks also. If they're vandalizing our public infrastructure, there is at least a citation issued.
Okay.
It's been years since I got my real estate license, but there is an implied easement out there that, I mean, if we've had people for 30 years out on the golf course, then is there an implied easement at this point?
Not once you put a notice up. There's no implied easement if you say this is the boundaries of the city. You go within this, it's a trespass.
Okay. Yeah, I think that signage is going to be the first and most important.
Well, and we have a lot of signs.
We do have a lot that say, really, that this facility and this grounds are only used for golf. And there's probably, I think I put up 30 last year throughout the golf course. And the issue with those are we have them on areas of the golf course where someone would enter from the road or street, where it's hard to get one right behind someone's backyard that are walking. I mean, a lot of them know they're out there, but they casually walk right by them.
And do you get those signs stolen?
We've had a few damaged. Yeah.
Yeah.
Could we, you know, when the people that have put gates on their back fence, can we lock it from our side?
Well, I think to answer that question, we've discussed at the golf committee, and we have in our first draft of the letter a notification that says if you live next to the golf course and you have gone out onto golf course property and built steps, stairs, stepping stones, you've with a shovel or a piece of equipment, you've dug a pathway from your house out into the golf course, that we're going to remove those improvements. And so I think that's an important thing to demonstrate that we're in control of the property, and that when people go onto the property and cut down trees or build things on our property, that we're going to immediately take action on those.
I think also fencing would be a really great idea in that case as well, because we're allowed to fence our property, and if they open their gate and there's a fence, we don't have to worry about them coming. So I don't know what you want to do, but I'm glad you've got a lot of good things to consider.
And I think I'll be in the second meeting in August, and part of that I'll probably bring some areas and costs to what a fence may look like. Not necessarily asking for approval, but just kind of a discussion on here's what I think it'll cost in areas of the golf course that I think that may impact. Bountiful Ridge, for example, has fencing on both sides of the road that just make the appearance of that golf course as if it's private, whereas ours right now, we don't have anything anywhere on the golf course that really designates, other than by five, which is more of a fence to help the walkers not get hit. But no really distinction between it looks like a park and it looks like a private facility. So,
Mayor, Tyler, did you mean in an upcoming council meeting?
Yes.
Yeah. So Tyler has a report coming up in I think it's August 15th, are we?
Yeah, second meeting in August.
Second meeting in August.
That's the 15th.
Where we'll report back on this issue to you, but also he'll be making a report to the council, a more in-depth report. We just wanted to really make sure that the council was supportive with us moving forward. I think Mayor Horrocks kind of identified exactly the issue, which is, in the past, the city has been inconsistent about this, and we need to become more consistent. I think now is the great time to do it because of our investment of approximately $4 million into the course, and we really need to present that in a positive way, mm-hmm. But we also need to protect the course and protect the customers on the course and the public who might be in danger of being in the way.
I have two ideas I'd like to talk through. I'll share the first one and get your ideas back, and then the second. And the first one is related to what Lisa said about citations. Is there a possibility that golf staff can issue citations kind of like an HOA?
No, Craig and I have talked about it a little bit. We have little cards that we hand out that have the golf course policy on it, and some people are, the hardest ones are the people that are super nice to you that say, oh yeah, I know about it. And then you'll see them out there tomorrow. So it's hard to be, to those that are super nice to you, to be like, well, sorry, I'm going to call the cops on you tomorrow if I see you. Whereas the ones that are a little bit more aggressive, I would say, in saying, hey, we don't like you out here, and you know, next time we'll have a police officer issuing a citation if we see you out here. Those are a little easier to kind of kick them out, but yeah.
And then following up from that, maybe to our city attorney or the chief, is it possible for the city to designate some type of code where we say the first infraction of trespassing at the golf course is this outcome, and probably the first one is a warning only, and then we don't have to worry about maybe criminalizing something that has been working for a lot of years, but the third or the second citation, then here are the consequences. Are we able to do that?
Can you? Yes. Is it a good policy? I think that's more of a practical, I think it's better to have a black and white ordinance, and then it's up to kind of the enforcement on how that happens at the justice court. So typically you'll have a city attorney or the prosecuting attorney that, if it is their first time, there's usually a lot more leniency. And then if there's, you know, repeat offender, then it goes up to the maximum kind of level. But just from a public policy standpoint, that usually is handled on the enforcement or the prosecution side, not really in the ordinance. That's how I would recommend that.
Okay. And then the second idea also goes along with what Lisa said about having a carrot. What do you think about the idea? I, as we know, I've talked about this many times in the council meetings, feel very aware of the golf course being a public asset that's not used by the full public. What do you think about the idea of doing an annual open house of the course? And it can be like a one night, like a Wednesday night in March, where you're not likely to have a lot of golfers, where you say to the residents all around, but to the city as well, come walk the whole golf course and we'll have hot dogs or something like that. Come, we'll show you the putting green or we'll show you the simulator downstairs, but it's a free, open, public event. We do it one time a year, so then we can also educate. You're welcome on this course this day. And then every other day is a paid day. It's not a walking course, and your dogs can't be here, all the other pieces, but that there is this open house piece. Like, you're welcome here, but here are the rules on how to be here.
And Ken and I have talked about this, and many of the members of the golf committee as well, is having more community events at the golf course. I think with the new facility, we're open to that. I think with an open house, I think it's a great idea to invite people up, have some food, music on the deck. I don't know if I would encourage them to go on the golf course, but we could. I think it's a good opportunity for us to educate them on what the golf course use is for and show them the facility and free food and music and things like that. So,
but Tyler, I kind of agree with her. We do the Liberty Fest at great expense and probably some damage every year, but I think that kind of an event would be really educational and sort of take the mystique away from that golf course with people who have never been on it and understanding. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm on the golf committee and I support the golf committee wholeheartedly on whatever they're going to come up with. But I at first I thought, oh no, we don't want everybody just walking around the course. But if it's one time a year and we say this is it, it may be that it's very clear. There's a line in the sand. You can do this today, but that's it.
And there could,
just before we post all the notices.
There could also be part of the events for that evening could be golf etiquette. Like, it's actually not great etiquette to be walking around the course if you're not playing, or these are the risks why you wouldn't do that. And there could even be like a walk, the distance of the course. Can you walk the whole course without going on the greens? Is there a paved path?
Yeah,
so if they just walked the paved path and you could say, this is 2.7 miles. If you walk the whole path, you've done 2.7 miles. Now, you're not supposed to walk this except for this one night. We do a 2.7 mile walk, come back again next year, or pay to golf.
And maybe we make it a late evening summer event. It's almost like a 5K, but it's a walk. And
I would say it's staggered start times then, because if you do like a 5K race, you're going to get a whole crew that are trying to go through at the same time.
Yeah.
But if you staggered start times, like every 5 minutes, and just let four people go every 5 minutes, like golfing, then they also learn that golf etiquette.
I'm open to it as long as it doesn't impact the revenue on the golf course. That's my biggest concern. So
that would be a pretty good walk with a change in elevation.
Yeah.
With someone who always takes the cart when I golf.
Yeah, the front nine would be about 2.5 miles just walking on the path, so that would be a good evening walk. Wouldn't take people too long.
Well, because I'm on the golf committee, I just want to encourage all of you on the council to support this idea. And they'll come back in August and give us more details. I have reviewed the letter. It's getting there. And the whole idea of informing people that you're not supposed to do this and then backing it up would be ideal.
Ken, we've considered it. Sounds like we're supportive. I guess you're not looking for any kind of a motion.
I wrote it as a motion, which you're able to do in the work session. Okay. So, well, yeah, it'd be great to have a formal motion from the council.
I'll entertain a motion.
Okay. I'll make a motion that we authorize staff, the golf course committee, in collaboration to begin an education campaign about issues regarding golf course use and misuse.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Elisa was on the second.
And can I amend or maybe just offer a suggestion that doesn't have to be formalized, which is just consideration of the open house concept and have that be really...
That's a friendly amendment.
Yeah.
Okay. That. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. We've got a few minutes. Let's. Why don't we jump down to the minutes?
Just FYI, Stan is attending online.
Oh, okay.
And he voted aye.
All right.
For that last
vote. All right. Thank you.
I'm not sure if he can talk
about. Let's jump down and approve the minutes of the last meeting.
Pending other comments or any comments from the council, I'm prepared to make a motion.
I did have one issue I wanted to bring up. That we in the minutes we tabled resolution 2023-31R, and in the minutes it says we will bring that back on tonight. And I don't believe we have it on tonight, so I wonder if we should amend the minutes just to say it at a later date. I could just see someone 5 years from now going through the minutes and going, wait a minute, where is that?
You could. That is what we said in the meeting. We could make a note right here in line 68 or after the motion that says in the minutes document that we did not consider this on July 18th, and it will be brought back as soon as the contract or the agreement is ready for consideration.
Okay.
If we want to make that note.
Okay.
I have one. There is this, I read the minutes. There's somewhere in there where it says Councilmember Baskin said there are like 10 mattresses on Victory Road, which I did, but I want to say why I said that. So I'm just going to say somewhere I need to revise the minutes to say she expressed concern about issues with regard to homelessness.
Okay.
And had noticed that there were mattresses that were deposited on
the street.
So
you weren't giving us a tip on how to get a new mattress?
Just it looked red, kind of goofy. So just to identify the homeless problem is that's why I did it. I'm not sure where it is in there. So Wendy, you'll have to find it and clarify, please.
Okay. Any other changes, corrections? Ted, I'm looking at you now.
All right, Mayor, thanks. I move that we approve the minutes of June 20th, 2023 as amended.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
And Stan may have said aye. Thank you, that passes. Let's go to action items. And are there any corrections, additions, subtractions there?
I've got a few. I guess I classify them as questions. I'll just go by number. Number six, is there any status update on that one? RFP for services will be prepared.
I could let Sherry answer this, but no, we have not put an RFP together yet, but we will be doing that in the next 30 days or so.
You remind me, so it says form-based code. Can you just remind me what that piece of it is?
It's really not form-based code. It's, if you recall, we were trying to bring in a firm that could help us on some of the sites immediately around Center Street and Orchard Drive, because we have property owners and developers who are anxious to have their projects approved, and they keep proposing things that we continue to say no to. And so the idea here was to hire an urban design firm to help put some alternatives together for those properties and look at those things. So it could be form-based code.
Yeah, no, and I remember what you said. Just the part where it says and form-based code, that sort of threw me for a loop. As a separate item, I think in conversations with Sherry and with Allie, I think there's a sense that from staff or a recommendation that, hey, maybe we should veer away from form-based code. And I think that what I'd suggest is let's talk about the direction that we do want to go. So maybe we have a work session on this topic of what are the land use and urban design regulations that do make sense prospectively for the town center.
I have a comment. I noticed the update about the Legacy Trail Park, which I'm very excited about. And I wonder, does that also include the one at the elementary school park? Both will be happening at the same time. Great. And then I have two items that I'd potentially like to add to this list. I don't know if I need other council members' support for that. One is to receive some type of training on resources for unhoused individuals or homelessness. And that training could happen in the Health and Wellness Committee directly instead of coming straight here, maybe in a work session. I feel like this is an issue that's going to present as very relevant for our city in the next 5 or 10 years. And I would love to feel like it's something we considered before we really had it knocking on our door. So the real assignment would be simply to find some type of a resource, whether it's a homeless shelter that would train us on these are the kinds of ordinances that people sometimes use, or these are the kinds of resources that cities occasionally have available. And then the second one, I had a resident talk to me about a resource that he said was going on in Woods Cross City, and I don't know if this is accurate, but he said that Woods Cross City waives utility fees for disabled vets living within the city. And that the number of disabled vets in the city is 100 or fewer. And he was wondering if North Salt Lake would consider something like that. So the action item would be to see if Woods Cross really does have a program like that, and then maybe consider it among this group if we have interest in considering an idea like that.
I actually thought we did that, or actors deployed people, we furloughed that. Or
I would have to really look at that.
Do you have an answer? Am I part of the meeting?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
There is a voice from above, yes.
Voice from above. Voice from way above. I'm up pretty high elevation here. Anyway, yeah, we had a program for, it wasn't for disabled vets, it was for active vets. So if somebody was deployed and their family members were living in the city, then we did have a reduced water. I don't know if it was reduced or free on the water bill. I'd have to go back and look. But that was something, I don't think we've ever done away with it. But, of course, there's not any deployed active vets in the city as there was at one time. So. But disabled vets, I think, would be the... do the same thing. I think so, we could do that. I would certainly support it.
So Heidi may have a better answer on this. Do you? I can't tell what from across the room.
I'm just nodding. So we don't have a disabled vet program. I can follow up with Woods Cross and their utility billing department and find out more about that. But we do a deferred or a reduced payment for those that are on active military duty. So there is a program for that. I see the adjustments come through every month. We probably have 3 or 4 households taking advantage of that program right now. So.
Thank you.
I have a couple of others. I understand number 7, that makes sense. What have we heard? The number 7 is relative to the bike lane pilot. Any update on what we have heard from Bountiful, what those conversations are? And part of what I'm just sort of wondering is if it makes any sense for there to be any council-to-council interactions, mayor-to-mayor, any recommendations that way.
I think that what we're waiting for is for their city council to adopt their active transportation plan as part of their general plan update. And then they will feel like they have the capacity to move forward on a project like this.
Do you know what their rough time frame is?
They said this summer, so I'm hoping by the end of August. But I will double check with their planning director this week. I'll make a note of that.
Okay, great. And then on item 15, which is about trees, tree plantings, I think we had talked about the idea of perhaps a tree planting program that encourages planting on private land. And am I right in that recollection?
Yes.
So I wonder if we could amend item 15 to just reflect that, or if you think it's apples and oranges and we ought to establish a different action item for that.
I actually think that that's a different action item.
Okay.
So I think it's good to add another action item, which is really sort of mirrors the Holiday City program we've been talking about.
Oh, it's item 4. Okay. Okay, got it. Sorry about that.
So that's encouraging the privatization of, incentivizing tree planting.
Okay, got it.
Yeah,
I just missed it.
That's new item 4.
I wasn't a conscientious reader of the items.
But it was there.
That concludes my questions at this time for everybody's shared benefit.
Thank you, Ted. Anything else on action items?
So I just one comment on Council Member Knowlton's comment about working with Bountiful. I do think that it would be a great subject to, if the council still would like to meet with Bountiful's council, it would be a great subject to bring up or to consider. But I also think maybe, Mayor, that's a request that maybe should come from you to their mayor.
We've talked, and there's a favorable.
Perhaps we should just put together a small agenda, and you could send it to their mayor and say, whenever you're available, here's some dates.
Yeah.
Something in the fall we could get together on.
Okay.
Okay, I'll work on that with you.
All right. Let's adjourn, and we'll start our regular city council meeting in 7.3 minutes.
How much time does it take the average person to get cobbled?